It happened one night. Better late than never. A frozen feminist aha moment. I'm Sabel Galindez, and this is the Z's Creative Office Hours. Classic Hollywood movies bring me comfort. They are like my mashed potatoes. I grew up in the 70s watching them on TV. It was kind of cool because I consumed the same entertainment as my mother, except she consumed it in a movie theater, and I in our suburban family room with the orange shag carpet and the black pleather lazy boy. One day, months after her passing, I needed a bit of comfort, a connection to her. Scrolling through the endless array of viewing options on my laptop, I was delighted to find It Happened One Night, a film classic starring Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable. Wow, a heaping, steaming pile of mashed potatoes with butter melting down its mountainous sides, steam coming off its peak. This was going to soothe every ache in my grieving heart, massage every groove of my weary brain, release thousands of endorphins, and wrap me in a warm blanket of pure joy for 90 minutes. Perfect. There they were, Colbert and Gable in black and white, their stylish 1930s sleek-lined clothing, she in her long black skirt, he in his high-waisted pants, the quintessential romantic comedy. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy. A bit of resistance? No, no, no. They can't fight it any longer. Kiss! Simultaneously falling deeply and madly in love, and she's being spanked. Wait, what? What did I just see? Okay, this was not the spanking of two consenting adults. What was this? What happened to my comfort food? I pushed the plate away. I felt sick. I started to think through what really happened one night. Here I am, a grown woman living during what has been called the third wave of feminism in the time of the Me Too movement, and the fairy tale shattering film Frozen, already conceived, produced, reviewed, and touted as groundbreaking and subverting gender stereotypes, and I am just seeing this classic Hollywood romantic comedy for what it is for the first time? How many other mounds of mashed potatoes with hidden caloric messages had I unknowingly consumed in my plaid bell-bottoms and huckaboo button-down shirt? Do I binge on these messages even now in my Lululemon yoga pants and top? For those who may not be familiar with the film, Claudette Colbert plays an heiress whose father wants to control who she marries. She rebels against her father, eloping against his will. She is brought back from this elopement and made prisoner on their yacht. Suffice it to say, as the story unfolds, Colbert, a grown woman, is manipulated by her father and spanked and belittled by Clark Gable, the man with whom she falls desperately in love and marries in the end. The scene that made me stop and push myself away was when Cable literally spanks her. At that moment, it hit me. No pun intended. This female character was no more than an object in this male-centric story. She's treated like a child by both her father and lover, told to do as she is commanded, told to shut up. Yes, Clark Gable repeatedly tells her to shut up, and told in every way possible that she is not the subject of her own narrative, but clearly an object to be had, to be taken, to be molded and groomed to fit into their heroic narrative. Now, this is nothing new in literary or cultural circles, nothing I didn't already learn in every one of my college English and American lit classes reading feminist philosopher Simone de Beauvoir. But this was not how I remembered my comfort food. This was supposed to be the ultimate romantic comedy, and we haven't even addressed the rich white people aspect of the film. Ugh. I still feel nauseated when I think the stories I consumed on a daily basis as a girl were comprised of such blatant objectification. I wondered how many other grown women felt disturbed by this, felt unnerved by it, felt they, perhaps too, had been programmed in ways of which they were not even conscious. How many of us had unknowingly accepted these stories as the foundation of our own stories through a kind of consumptive osmosis. When I wasn't consuming Hollywood classic films on TV, I was consuming Disney animated films like Snow White and Cinderella. Wandering in my backyard, I would sing to the trees and flowers and worms and spiders. For some reason, I could never get the rabbits or deer or horses and mice to appear like they did for those two young ladies. Someday my prince will come would just burst out of me, like a record was placed on a turntable in my mind, playing out the speakers of my mouth, to use a 20th century image. I would just sing what had been input without much thought as to what I was singing. It became part of me somehow, ingrained in me, to take that passive role, to be found, to have him come to me, not me to him, and certainly not me to some other adventure in life. I would bippity-boppity-boo around the house, wanting a fairy godmother to appear and make me beautiful, and a prince with my glass slipper to make me whole and complete. No matter how much my parents input that I was lovely just the way I was, that I could be anything I wanted to be, these stories, these heaps of mashed potatoes I loved, said otherwise. Way before STEM was all the craze for young women, I was enrolled in the highest level math and science classes in my high school, headed for Harvard, and still, there was this undeniable input that seeped its way into my psyche. So much so that when I took my boys to see Frozen in December 2013, I was on the edge of my seat with every twist and turn in this 21st century story. Elsa belted out, "Let it go." It was gorgeous and wonderful, and slowly chipping away at my programmed thinking. New synapses were being formed from this melodious proclamation that girls and women could stop censoring themselves, could really express what was on their mind, could actually be who they were without this veil of containment or silence. Then I was thrown when the prince turned out to be a con artist, a sham, a less than honorable man. But the real aha moment, my epiphany, came when the story made clear true love was the only thing that could break the spell. I was waiting on the edge of my seat for true love's kiss, simultaneously falling in love. Wait, what? True love is between the sisters? And there it was, the turntable in my mind. The record of Someday My Prince Will Come was smashed, replaced with Let It Go, some 40 years later. But why did it take so long? I was perplexed until I came across this concept in my podcast library. Krista Tippett of the On Being podcast was interviewing John Paul Lederach, Professor Emeritus of International Peacebuilding at Notre Dame University. He relayed this concept of the 200-year present, meaning time, as in past, present, future, not a gift with a bow. I'd like us all to do this now, together, if you would picture with me. Go back at your youngest age that you can remember, who the oldest person was that held you. Calculate back to that birth date. Roughly, mine would be my great-grandmother, who was born around 1870. She was born in Italy just as it was becoming a nation state, before America's Lady Liberty welcomed her and countless others through the halls of Ellis Island. Now, the second part. Think about the youngest member of your extended family. Imagine a robust life. To what decade might she or he live? You were held and touched, and you will touch the lives of people that cover a 200-year present. Think about that. We may feel such a strong sense of individual ego, that our minds are our own, that we are independent thinkers, apart and separate from the times even in which we live. Yet, we are not only products of our own time, we are human products of this 200-year present. Unless we stop and think about that, we may not even have recognized what ideas in our culture may have influenced us. We may think our mindset is completely processing life through a contemporary 21st century lens, or even a modern 20th century lens, when in fact, We can't help but see the world through a lens tainted and influenced by our great-grandmother's 19th century view and the parameters of her society's structure and culture. What really happened one night, in seeking to connect solely with my mother, to find joy in watching the Hollywood classic films we both loved, I actually butted up against my connection to the constraints placed on my grandmother and great-grandmother's lives, the inescapable, overwhelming nature of the male-centric world and stories produced by their generation. As an artist, I would like to take this concept one step further and have us examine the 200-year present influencing the creators of the stories we consume. When we consume pop culture made in a different time, we are then allowing ourselves to be touched not only by the person who created that film or song, but by their 200-year present, the cultural influences that informed their thinking and therefore their stories. Made in 1934, It Happened One Night was directed by Frank Capra, born in 1897, the youngest of seven children. Approximating Frank Capra's 200-year present, using my rudimentary calculations, we could envision him being held by a great-grandmother born in 1807. The year Giuseppe Garibaldi, the general who's credited with unifying Italy, was born. And in America, the year Thomas Jefferson passed the Embargo Act prohibiting American ships from trading with foreign ports while he, writer of the Declaration of Independence, still legally owned people. If we do the same for Walt Disney, the visionary for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, born 1901, we can envision him being held by a great-grandmother born in 1811, before women could vote or own property in their own names in America. The silver lining here is look how far the Disney Corporation has come from its founder's influences, evolving over time as the next generation of creators within the corporation start to tell their own stories. We go from Snow White, made in 1937, to Frozen, made in 2013 with its hit song, Let It Go, written by the husband and wife team of Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, both born in the 1970s. Don't let it be lost on you that there is a woman in the creative process here. Just as there is a woman in the creative process of the screenplay for Frozen, written by Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck. Just like that, two Disney films 76 years apart and a new record, or I should say a new song, is streaming in the minds of the next generation. And I, on my couch, am asking myself, do I really want to watch It Happen One Night made 86 years ago? Is there another soothing, meaningful way I can connect to my mother? With a nod to Frozen for creating a new fairy tale bathed in the true love of two sisters and the white ice of Elsa's authentic self-expression, against which we can see the darkness of stories centered on female objectification, I wanted to have us all stop and take a moment to think about the pop culture we consumed in our youth. Think about how it was informed by the 200-year present of those who created it, and ask ourselves, what do we do with it now? Do we destroy it? Do we put it in a museum and explain what it is, what it represents? Do we alter it? Keep what works, infuse it with new artistic life, celebrate and enjoy it? Or maybe a little of everything, depending on whether we want to dump that heaping pile of mashed potatoes in the garbage and eat a kale salad. Eat the mashed potatoes, telling ourselves we're going to go to the gym for an hour to work it off. Or infuse our mashed potatoes with cauliflower, skim milk, half the butter and salt, sit down and consume. I'm really not sure. What are you in the mood for?